This is the first lecture in the evolution unit. I call it Darwin's Road to Discovery, and I'm going to give you a brief history. Darwin was born on February 12, 1809. Is that date significant in any other respect that you might know of? Yes. That's right. Abraham Lincoln was born on that exact same day. And this is 2008, when I'm recording this. And does anyone subscribe to Newsweek magazine? Okay. Does anyone remember seeing this in the July issue, one of the July issues of Newsweek magazine, the cover story? It has Lincoln versus Darwin, and the subtitle is Who Matters Most? And the reason, of course, they put these two guys on the cover is because they were born on the exact same day. And what's significant? Why did they do it this year? Why all of a sudden did it just appear now? Okay, yeah. Exactly. It's the 200th anniversary coming up of their birthday. And you are going to see Darwin Mania this year. It's the best year to be in AP Bio because there are going to be so many Darwin things going on this year because it's 200 years since his birth. And also, just as another little interesting tidbit, not only is it 200 years since his birth, but it's 150 years since he first published his ideas about natural selection. So it's kind of a banner year. It's like you've got the 200th anniversary of his birth and the 150th anniversary of Origin of Species. So it's like, woo, craziness this year. So you're going to see tons of stuff. Okay, let's go through some of his early life. His father was a physician, and so he came from a very well-educated, wealthy family. You know, fairly similar to you guys. I mean, you guys live in Los Gatos. Your parents are probably pretty wealthy for the most part. Your parents may be executives in Silicon Valley companies or engineers or doctors or lawyers or all the, you know, kind of jobs. And so he's probably similar to you. In fact, his father wanted him to become a doctor. And so as a result, he went to the University of Edinburgh in Scotland because it was one of the best medical schools in Europe. The problem is he hated it. And he actually ended up leaving University of Edinburgh partway through his education. And he transferred to Cambridge, where he actually studied divinity, and because he wanted to eventually become a clergyman, which is rather ironic if you think about it. He loved natural history. Natural history is the study of nature, animals, plants, geology, this kind of stuff. And he loved to collect beetles, and he also hunted animals. And what's interesting is people who were into natural history back in the 1800s, they actually hunted animals. So people these days that love animals, you know, join the Nature Conservancy and are trying to protect animals, but back then you went out and killed them. So we've kind of had a change about how that works. But he really loved animals. And he got to know his professors at Cambridge. And it turned out when he left Cambridge, an opportunity emerged. There was a voyage that was commencing, a five-year voyage around the world on the HMS Beagle. And the captain of this ship, Fitzroy, was only 23 years old. And he wanted a companion who was similar to him, educated, intelligent, and so forth. And so he was looking for that companion who would share his cabin with him during this voyage. And Darwin's name came up because Darwin got to know a number of professors at Cambridge who were into natural history. They were geology professors or zoology or botany or whatever. And so he was invited to participate in this voyage. And it's been stated in some books that he was offered the position of naturalist. I actually put that in my lecture notes, but it's not actually true. He was really the cabin mate of Captain Fitzroy. Darwin was 22 at the time. Fitzroy was 23. They were about the same age, and they were very similar backgrounds. There was another guy who was the naturalist, but Darwin was so into natural history that during the voyage, this other guy actually left the voyage because Darwin sort of dominated him in terms of just being a much better naturalist and ended up becoming sort of the official naturalist on board. What's interesting is that his father said no, he couldn't go. And what Darwin did, he did something very intelligent. He went to his uncle, his father's brother, and he actually got his uncle to convince his father to let him go. It's probably not unsimilar to what might happen to you guys. You know, you go to college for 4 years, and you know you've been doing that, and then you go to your dad, or and you say, "Hey, Dad, I want to go on this voyage around the world for 5 years." He's like, "What are you talking about? Go get a job. You know, I've just paid for 4 years of college. It's time for you to get out and get a real job." And that's kind of what Darwin's dad thought. But luckily, his uncle convinces his father to let him go because, of course, this voyage was very important for the history of science. And it turned out to be a five-year journey, but most of the time was spent around South America. The purpose of this voyage was to map the coast of South America in much greater detail. It's still the early 1800s. They had some okay maps of South America, but not as good as they wanted. And so that's what they were doing. Two important things happened to Charles. Here we are on the next slide. First of all, he read a book called The Principles of Geology by a man named Charles Lyell, and I've actually got the frontispiece from the book right here. And what this book showed Darwin, or made Darwin aware of, was pretty important for his development as a scientist. It explained that geological forces that are at work today are the same forces that have shaped our Earth in the past. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you go out and you look at what are the geological forces today, earthquakes, hurricanes, I mean, we can add weather into this because weather helps shape the Earth as well, erosion, glaciers, volcanoes. I mean, you can list a whole bunch of different geological and, I guess, meteorological forces that can affect what the Earth looks like. And it turns out that, therefore, the geological features that we see today, like mountains and canyons and so forth, are really the result of slow processes that have been working for a very long time on Earth, right? And I'll give you a great example here. If you look out the window, you see these beautiful mountains that, Los Gatos is sort of nestled up right next to the mountains here. And if you look at those mountains, you wonder, well, how did they get there? Well, in 1989, there was a huge earthquake that happened here that I, lived through, actually. And that earthquake, results of similar earthquakes like that over many, many, many years is what caused those mountains to be lifted up to their current height. And, it's thousands and maybe millions of years that this has been going on. And that's what Darwin realized from Lyell's book. And what's interesting about this is that at the time that Darwin left on his voyage, it was believed that the Earth was created in 4004 BC. Now, the guy who did this was Bishop Usher. He went to the Bible and he looked at the genealogies and he sort of counted back years and so forth using the genealogies in the Bible and sort of figured out that the Earth is about 6,000 years old. And so that's what Darwin thought when he left on his voyage. But then he starts reading Lyell's book and he realizes, gee, if I'm seeing this mountain range here, it's going to require more than 6,000 years to kind of raise that mountain range up through the process of earthquakes and so forth. And so Darwin's already sort of realizing that maybe the Earth is a little bit older than 6,000 years. Real important. Okay, the second thing that happened to him was he visited the Galapagos Islands. And as you see in my slide here, there's a map of South America. And the country Ecuador is in South America, on the west coast of South America, and the equator runs right through Ecuador. And that's where Ecuador gets its name, the equator, right? And if you go 600 miles west of Ecuador, out into the Pacific, there's an archipelago of islands known as the Galapagos. And in fact, my map down below, you can actually see the islands, and you'll see that the equator runs right through the middle of the Galapagos Islands. Okay, so they're right on the equator. And what Darwin observed is that each island had a different species of tortoise and a different species of finch. And what's interesting is, even though each island had a different finch, what he noticed is that they looked very similar. These finches looked similar to finches he had seen in Ecuador, just 600 miles away, and quite a bit different than finches he had seen back in England. Now, was this a coincidence, or was there some, you know, reason for this? And he started thinking about this. And the best explanation is that, well, some original pair of finches had, you know, made it out to the Galapagos and then started breeding, and over time they evolved into these 13 different species of finches that eventually that were there when Darwin happened to visit the islands. But you got to remember, this was a huge shift in thinking, because at the time when Darwin left on his voyage, he was a creationist. He was a biblical fundamentalist who believed that the Earth was created 6,000 years ago. But we've got to realize that certainly by this point, or certainly very shortly after returning to England, Darwin was probably an evolutionist. In other words, he probably started to realize, just he's a very keen observer, really good thinker. He started to kind of put things together and thought, well, you know, species probably evolved. They weren't created once and stayed the same for 6,000 years. They probably were, they evolved through time. And because of Lyell's book, in his mind, the Earth was a lot older than 6,000 years. And so, therefore, there was the time to do that, to have that evolution occur. Okay, so what happens is, he arrives back home in the fall of 1836. So now he's 27 years old, right? He left when he was 22. He arrives back in England when he's 27. And over the next 2 years, several things happen to Darwin. First of all, he gets married. He marries Emma Wedgwood, which is actually, you know, it's kind of weird, because it turns out, I don't know if any of you know this, Emma Wedgwood was his first cousin. So I want you guys to just, you know, just kind of, let's do a little mind thing here. I want you to, like, imagine your cousins, you know, think about, all, you know, you all have cousins, and think about marrying one of your cousins, okay? Kind of weird. Today, we wouldn't do that. But back in the 1800s in England, they did that. So he actually married his first cousin. It wasn't a bad move, because it turned out that his cousin, Emma, came from an extremely wealthy family. Does the word Wedgwood mean anything to anybody in this room? Does Wedgwood mean anything? What's that?
Golf.
Golf, yeah, okay. Not golf. What's that? It's not furniture, but something similar. Anybody recognize the word? It turns out that Wedgwood is very famous china that came from England, and it was actually Emma's father who, I'm not sure if it was her father or her grandfather, but her family were the ones that actually established the Wedgwood China, you know, empire, and they were mega wealthy back then. So basically, once Charles married Emma, he was independently wealthy, and he never had a job in his whole life. He never actually had an official job. He never had to work, okay, which is amazing, you know. So he eventually moved to a beautiful home about 16 miles southeast of London in the village of Down. And so I want you to kind of picture this. Darwin, you know, he's about 30 years old, roughly, marries his first cousin, and now he's set for life. He never has to work a day in his life. But in actuality, he was a complete workaholic overachiever. So he actually worked at his home in Down, in the village of Down, his whole life. And he probably did more in his lifetime than, you know, just about any other person, you know, on the planet. I mean, a lot of people accomplish a lot of things. He accomplished amazing things. And but he never had to have an official. He never had an official job. What happened shortly after he was married, around this same time, he read an important book. And the book is called Essay on the Principle of Population by Reverend Thomas Malthus. And I've actually got a picture of the frontispiece of that book right here. And what Thomas Malthus argues in his book is that human population grows faster than the ability to produce food. And because of that, at some point, population is going to outstrip the food supply. And so if you actually look at a graph of population, you're going to see it go exponential, just curve up and just go really steep. Whereas food supply is more linear, kind of grows like this. And there's going to be a point at which population outstrips food supply, and you can imagine what's going to happen then. Massive starvation. And that's essentially what Malthus was arguing. And it's kind of a scary book. Well, it was at that point that Darwin came up with his idea of natural selection. And he actually did an interesting calculation. Let me kind of walk you through it. He actually took a, he said, okay, let's take a single breeding pair of elephants, okay? And let's imagine they lived and produced six offspring, and that all of these offspring lived and then reproduced normal number of offspring, and you just continue to do this. After 750 years, he calculated that there would be 19 million elephants on Earth. Okay, well, there aren't 19 million elephants on Earth. And so in actuality, the Earth, the elephant population stays relatively constant year to year. And Darwin realized that the reason this happened is because of natural selection. Nature selects which ones live and which ones die and kind of calls the weaker ones and the ones that are more fit, the ones that can, you know, survive, find a mate, and find resources are going to reproduce. And over time, this will cause a change in species and then eventually a change from one species to another species. Okay? So that's kind of the idea. Now, you'd think that Darwin would immediately get this in print. You know, he'll be famous, right? But he delays. He doesn't actually print. He doesn't publish anything. But he did in 1844 write out a sketch of his ideas, and he gave it to his wife and said, listen, if I die, publish this. This is really important. And what I've done here is I've actually taken a little piece of this 1844 sketch, and I'm going to read it to you. Now, this is, you got to remember, this is written in sort of Victorian England, so his language is a little bit different than what we write today. But, I mean, it's, you can understand it. It's just a little convoluted. So let's kind of walk through it. This is what Darwin wrote. Quote, as many more individuals of each species are born than can possibly survive, and as, consequently, there is a frequently reoccurring struggle for existence, it follows that any being, if it vary however slightly in a manner profitable to itself, under the complex and sometimes varying conditions of life, will have a better chance of surviving and thus be, and here's the word, naturally selected. And then he continues, from the strong principles of inheritance, any selected variety will tend to propagate its new and modified form. And so that's kind of a, you know, just a brief little summary of his idea of natural selection. Now, obviously, we've mentioned that Darwin probably became an evolutionist during his voyage on the Beagle, or certainly soon after he arrived in England. And in 1838, after reading Malthus, he came up with a mechanism for evolution. We call it natural selection. Now, before I move on, let me just say this to you guys. It's really important. I want you to understand there's a difference between evolution and natural selection, okay? Evolution, in fact, Darwin never really used the word evolution in his book or his writings. He used the word descent with modification. So he basically said organisms, you know, descended and then there was modification with each generation. That was his idea. But that was what he came up with first. But he didn't know how that happened. Later, he came up with the idea, oh, it's nature selects, and that's what is the mechanism which drives this descent with modification or this evolution. Well, he didn't publish any of this stuff until 20 years later, in 1858. How come? Anybody have an idea why? Yeah.
Because he was still like a member of the church and didn't want to upset like all the people there. He knew he'd be targeted by like hateful acts.
Yeah, exactly. He was afraid of the church. He was afraid that he would be attacked by the church. It was kind of a revolutionary idea. It's threatening to people. And so he actually just decided to lay low. Now, what he did during those 20 years was he worked hard, and he worked at his home, he worked at Downhouse, and he amassed evidence to support his idea. So that's what he was doing his whole life. And he was hoping by the end of his life, he would finally write his book and then publish it, having amassed all this evidence. In fact, 8 of the years that he actually worked specifically on just one group of organisms, barnacles, and he wrote a 4-volume work on barnacles. And I mean, that's like crazy. And you know, people go, well, why did he write and spend 8 years of his life working on barnacles? And it was probably because he wanted to really understand one group of organisms so then he could understand how evolution occurred. He wanted to really get detailed. He sort of wanted to establish his credentials and really get it right. And what's kind of, there's a cute little story that's been, you know, repeated in many biographies of Darwin, that his kids would go over to other families' homes to play, you know, with other kids. And then his kids would ask, you know, their friends, does your dad work on barnacles too? Because they just thought that that's what dads did. They worked on barnacles. It was kind of funny. So anyhow. So finally what happens is he starts to write out his project, you know, write out his theory. And this project would, you know, have taken him several years to complete. But in June of 1858, almost exactly 150 years ago from now, you know, from now, he received a letter from Alfred Wallace, who was an English naturalist. Alfred Wallace was younger than Darwin, but he was doing kind of what Darwin did. He was out collecting all kinds of different animals and plants and so forth. And he was in Indonesia, which back then was called the Malay Archipelago. And once again, so here he is. He's an English naturalist. He's on a bunch of different islands collecting animals and plants. And he stumbles upon the exact same idea that Darwin had 20 years before. This manuscript that Darwin received from Alfred Wallace basically had the theory of natural selection completely written out. And it blew Darwin away. And it freaked him out because he was, you know, he was hoping to, you know, publish his work and become famous for it. What's fascinating to me is that Wallace stumbled upon the mechanism of evolution, natural selection, during a fit of malaria. He came down with malaria. And malaria causes you to have you get these chills, and then you sweat. You go through these fevers and back and, you know, up and down. And he was in bed for a number of weeks, really sick. And while he was in this sort of fighting malaria, he ended up, interestingly enough, reading the exact same work that Darwin had read 20 years before. He read Thomas Malthus's essay on Principles of Population. So it's the exact same work, and that's what gave him the idea of natural selection. So this is like a weird coincidence of history. Let's think about it, you guys. These two guys from England, they're both naturalists. They both are sort of traveling the world, and they're in an archipelago of islands, you know, collecting animals, and they happen to read Thomas Malthus's essay, and then they come up with the idea of natural selection. It's amazing. It's really remarkable. Well, what happens is Darwin's friends knew about his theory, and they, you know, Darwin told them, you know, he'd received this package from Wallace, and his friends wanted Darwin to receive credit And so what they came up with a solution. They said, listen, this is what we'll do. We'll take Wallace's manuscript, and then Darwin, you can dust off your 1844 manuscript, maybe clean it up a little bit, and we'll read both papers at the Linnaean Society's meeting in July in London in 1858. And that's what they did. So they established that both men had come up with the same idea. Now, any idea where the title Linnaean Society came from? Where do you think they got the name? Yeah. Yeah, Linnaeus. So there was a group of natural history people in London who would meet every month talking about natural history, and they named it after Carolus Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist who had come up with, you know, the system of classifying organisms. Well, obviously Darwin needed to quickly rush into publication his book, and he did. So within 18 months, he publishes his famous, you know, his magnum opus, his most famous work. And the actual full title reads, I'm going to read it to you because it's crazy. Here's the title of his book: On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Okay, that's the full title of his book. We now just know it as The Origin of Species, but that's the full title to his book. So, as you can imagine, his theory came under attack by the church, and however, the scientific community immediately got it, and they said, yep, we get it. Evolution makes sense. But what's interesting, and most people don't know this, is that even though he convinced the scientific community and some of the public pretty much immediately that evolution occurred, that there was this descent with modification, that species weren't created once and always stayed the same, you know, he pretty much convinced a lot of people of that. What he didn't convince people of is the mechanism. The mechanism, natural selection, what people weren't convinced of that. And it wasn't until the 20th century that finally people believed that natural selection was the mechanism. And we'll talk more about that later in this unit, but I just wanted to make that known to you because a lot of people don't realize that. He died in 1882, and he's buried in Westminster Abbey, very close to another famous scientist, Isaac Newton. Now, has anyone been to Westminster Abbey? Does anyone remember seeing Darwin's grave? Okay, so you guys remember seeing his grave. And if you remember, it's very close to Isaac Newton's grave, and so they're both very close to one another. And I highly recommend, if you end up going to London, you absolutely have to go to Westminster Abbey. It's one of the most interesting places, and because there's so many famous people that are buried there, and Darwin and Newton are two of the famous people that are there. It's a beautiful cathedral, too. Okay, so that's my lecture.